2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. Jobs attracting dropouts. At quitting time, a throng of very young workers walked tiredly out of the gate of the Lihua Printworks, a township enterprise in Shenzhen Special Economic Zone, Guangdong Province. 50% were only 13 years old on the average, while the oldest were no more than 17. The teenagers had to work 14 or 15 hours a day. They started at 7 a.m. every day and had to work until noon. After a one-hour lunch break, they worked to 6 p.m. and then had another one-hour rest. Then they went to supper and went back to work again for 3 or 4 hours. Although life was very hard, none of them left. They earned 100 yuan a month. I have much more money than my father, who is a middle school teacher, a girl said proudly. In Linxia, the capital of Hui Autonomous Prefecture in Gansu Province, dozens of mosques were erected, attracting both tourists and peddlers. At the stands that sold beef, vegetables, fruits, and books, children were doing business. The oldest were no more than 16, and the youngest about 6. One child weighed 1 kilogram of apples on his balance scale. When he lifted it, the pan of the balance touched his feet. He staggered among the bustling crowds of tourists, crying out for business. Since the Spring Festival of 1988, more than 1,000 primary and middle school students at Yulin Prefecture in Guangxi-Zhuang Autonomous Region have left home to work in factories in Shenzhen Special Economic Zone and Dongguan County in Guangdong Province. 12 students from the Xingchang Middle School in Lanzhou, Gansu Province, quit school. They left a letter that said, "Dear teacher, we are grown up. Since you taught us to be independent and self-supporting, we are beginning now. These children, whose parents are all well-educated, were good students in their class." Not far away from Xi'an, an ancient capital in Shanxi Province, there was a cave dwelling in which more than 30 youths were living. They were all boys between the ages of 11 and 18. "We came out to find a new life," said one boy. But life was not as beautiful as they had dreamed. They had no job and no money. Eventually, they gathered there. In Guangzhou, 77% of the juvenile delinquents under 18 were found to be truants. China News Service reported that it's very difficult for well-known professors in the universities in Guangzhou to enroll their students. When a medical college planned to enroll 33 students, only 26 people applied. In March 1988, a postgraduate majoring in mechanical engineering in Shanghai Jiao Tong University, who came from a remote rural area, asked for permission to quit school. He said that for the sake of changing his backward hometown, he decided to return and do something for it. But he did not go back home. He became a businessman in Shanghai. "After 3 years of study, we will finally get our master's degree and 86 yuan 50 as a monthly salary. That cannot buy 2 sweaters. Knowledge is too cheap," said a graduate student who had quit school. In 1988, when the State Commission of Education decided to try a new method of job assignment in some universities, letting the graduates choose their own jobs, and vice versa. It unexpectedly disrupted the education process itself. Every college student and graduate was busy looking for jobs. They had no time to study. We have no iron rice bowls. The earlier we find a job, the better, said a student. A wave of quitting school and going into business has swept the campuses of many universities and colleges in China. After the chaotic 10-year-long Cultural Revolution, China had a shortage of 60 million engineers. Now it seems there is a second crisis. Only 11.8 out of every 10,000 people are receiving a higher education, 429.1 studying in high school, and 1,324.7 in primary school. More and more illiterates are living in the society.
2. Those who do not want to go to college. According to the August 10th issue of The Youth, out of 30,000 school graduates in Shanghai who could take the college entrance examination this year, only 23,000 sat for it. What happened to all the others? Allowing for 2,000 who were exempted from the examination and went straight to college for their brilliance or for whatever reasons, we still have 5,000 unaccounted for. In other words, more than 16% of school graduates who got good marks and were qualified to take the entrance examination gave up the chance of going to college. This is certainly a new phenomenon ever since 1977, when competitive entrance examination was restored. But the question is this going to be a growing tendency? To answer this question, we have to look into the reasons why the students gave up the examination. Did they give up out of their own free will, or were they under some sort of coercion? A simple, clear-cut answer, I am afraid, is impossible to find. Different groups of students give up the examinations for different reasons. Those from key schools, and they are mostly brilliant students, give up for the simple reason that they want to go abroad. Once they become college students, they are bound by certain regulations which make it very difficult, if not impossible, for them to leave the country. Then there are those who think there is not much point in going to college anyway, because you can hardly ever get an ideal job after you graduate. The pay is low, and more often than not, the job is outside your field, so you get the frustrated feeling of having wasted 4 precious years of your life in college. Besides, there is always the danger of your being assigned to a post in another part of the country. So why not be practical and look for a well-paid job straight after middle school? Graduates from ordinary middle schools gave up their chances because they lacked self-confidence. Why try when I stand very little chance? Not only the poorer students themselves thought this way. Some teachers even did their best to dissuade them from taking the entrance examination. If they could not increase the number of successful candidates from their school, they could at least decrease the number of unsuccessful candidates by not allowing the poorer students to sit for it. In other words, if they could not increase the absolute number, they would raise the ratio of successful candidates. What do teachers generally think of this new phenomenon? Some are frankly worried. Such students lack drive and want to take things easy. This is a reflection of looking down on knowledge, and should be taken seriously. Other teachers think there is nothing to be alarmed about. Don't we often tell the students that going to college is not the only road they can take? Society is made up of different strata of useful people. Now that the students have made their own choice in finding their place in society, why make such a fuss about it?
Lesson 6. Is euthanasia humane? Text. A doctor of good reputation hastened his patient's death. The most famous mercy-killing case in America's history involves Dr. Herman N. Sanders, a country doctor from New Hampshire. In the early 1950s, Dr. Sanders had been treating a 60-year-old woman in Hillsborough County Hospital who was dying of cancer. The woman had wasted away from 140 pounds to 80 pounds. There was no chance for recovery, and she suffered extreme pain. Often, she screamed out in anguish from her bed. She begged everyone who came near her to help her die. Toward the end, there was little Dr. Sanders could do medically to ease his patient's suffering. He knew that her last days would be torturously painful. So he decided to put an end to her misery. Dr. Sanders gave his patient 4 lethal injections of air, which caused her to die painlessly in under 10 minutes. He recorded his action on the hospital's record and said no more of the matter. However, hospital administrators came across Dr. Sanders' entry when reviewing the records at a staff meeting and reported it to the state. A warrant for the doctor's arrest was issued and served by the sheriff. The warrant charged that Dr. Sanders feloniously and willfully, and of his own malice and aforethought, did inject air into the veins of Abby Borotow, and with said injection, feloniously and willfully, and of his said malice aforethought, killed and murdered his patient. The doctor pleaded not guilty, and was released on $25,000 bail. Dr. Sanders had been a known and respected member of his community for many years. He was born in New Hampshire, where his father had been an official of the Public Service Corporation of New Hampshire. In college, Dr. Sanders had been captain of the Dartmouth ski team, as well as a member of the college symphony orchestra. He had recently returned from Europe, where he had continued his study of medicine. Until the time of the mercy killing, his reputation was excellent. Dr. Sanders had been considered a trusted and honored physician. In response to the charges hurled against him, Dr. Sanders claimed that he had done no wrong. The woman had been within hours of her death. Moved by pity, he had merely hastened an extremely brutal end. The Sunday after his arrest, Dr. Sanders and his family attended services at their church as usual. His minister and other clergy members across the state openly expressed their support. One minister in a nearby town preached a stirring sermon in Dr. Sanders' defense. He said that if the doctor was guilty, he was guilty too, for he had often prayed that some suffering parishioner might be eased into the experience of death. Later that day, 605 of the 650 registered voters in his town presented Dr. Sanders with a written testimonial to his integrity and goodwill. They told him to use it wherever it might help him to prove his innocence. However, their efforts did little good. The Attorney General of New Hampshire firmly stated that the case will be presented forcefully and in complete detail, regardless of the personalities involved, to the end that justice may be met. In response, hundreds of Dr. Sanders' fellow townspeople offered to testify on his behalf. They signed petitions urging the courts to dismiss the case. Nevertheless, a grand jury indicted him for first-degree murder. "All I can say," stated Sanders, "is that I am not guilty of any legal or moral wrong, and ultimately my position will be vindicated." Not long afterwards, Dr. Sanders was acquitted. But even after he was declared innocent, some were intent on punishing the doctor. His license to practice medicine was suspended. And while some clergy members had supported Dr. Sanders, others loudly condemned him from their pulpits. Among them was the Reverend Billy Graham, who stated in Boston that Dr. Sanders should be punished as an example, and that anyone who voluntarily, knowingly, or premeditatedly takes the life...
Chimney cut off fine.
Chimney cut off fine.
Chimney cut off fine.